Side 3. The big board on the main concourse said there was an hour to wait until the next downward shuttle. Kin found a bar with a window overlooking the shuttle hall. The bar was called the Broken Drum. "Why?" she asked the Kung behind the bar. Saucer-eyed, he fixed her with a bland stare of barman everywhere.
"You can't beat it," he said. "Your wish?"
I thought Kung had no sense of humour.
"That is so."
The Bar Kung looked at her carefully.
"From Earth?"
he asked. "Yes," said Kin.
"Which one? I've got a brother-uncle on real Earth."
"The genuine one," said Kin sharply. He looked at her thoughtfully again, then reached under the counter and pulled out a filmy cassette that Kin recognised with a sinking heart.
"I thought the face was familiar," said the Bar Kung triumphantly. "Soon as you walked in, I thought, very familiar face. Of course, it's a bad hollow on the filmy, but still, ha! Do you think you could do a voice print on it, Miss Arad?"
He grinned horribly. She smiled valiantly, and took the tape translation of Continuous Creation from his damp, four-fingered hands. "Of course, it's not for you, I understand. It's for your nephew Sam," she murmured cruelly. The Kung looked startled.
"I have no nephew Sam," he said, "although I had intended it for my son, brother Bert Kultk. How did you know?"
"Magic," sighed Kin. She took her drink to the big window and idly watched tugs shunting cargo shuttles across the marshalling wires, while behind her she half heard the Bar Kung talking excitedly to someone on the intercom. Then a someone was standing by her chair. She looked round, and then up. A Kung was standing beside her. Look at the Kung. 7 feet tall, and then topped off with a red coxcomb that was made of something like hair. 2 saucer eyes filled the face, and they were now 2/3 closed against the lights that had been turned up by the Bar Kung out of deference to Kin. The body was skeletal, with bodybuilder's muscles strung like beads on a wire, and a bulge between the shoulder blades for the third lung. The ship suit it wore was a masterpiece of tailoring. It had to be. The Kung had 4 arms. It grinned. A Kung grin was a red crescent with harp strings of mucus.
"My name is Marco Farfara," he said, "and if it will help you to cease staring, I am a naturalized human being. You only think you're seeing a Kung. Don't let a mere unfortunate accident of birth confuse you."
"My apologies," said Kin. "It was the 2nd pair of arms.
"Quite so,"
he bent lower, and said, in the voice laden with the breath of swamps,
"A flat world?"
Then he sat down, while they sought for clues in each other's face. "How did you know?" said Kin.
"Magic," he said. "I recognized you, of course. I enjoyed your book. I know Kin Arad works for the company. I see her sitting in Kung Line Top, a place one would not expect to find her. She looks ill at ease. I recall that about a month ago, when I was on Eftnir and couldn't get a ship out, being only the 3rd best long-haul pilot in the region, I was approached by a man who..."
"I think I know the man," said Kin.
"He said certain things and made certain offers. What did he offer you?"
Kin shrugged. "Among other things, a cloak of invisibility." The Kung's eyes widened.
"He offered me a small animal skin pouch which produced these," he murmured.
Kin picked up the notes he laid on the table. There was a wad of 100 and 1,000 day bills, an Eftnik ceramic 144 pium bar, a thin roll of assorted human currencies, several hundred Star Chamber tokens, and a computer card.
"Some of the currency I tendered to a money changer on Eftnia," said Marco. "And she accepted it. There can be no greater proof of its genuineness if you have ever done business with an Eftnik. I think the card is a key card to an autobank, probably on Eftnia. There was a lot more, mostly Eftnik dollar bars. I was poor at the time."
Kin flicked a pium bar and watched it roll across the table. "The bag produced them?" she asked slowly.
"Aye, 'twas no more than hand-sized. I watched it all come out. I thought he was company. He wished to buy my services."
"As a pilot?" The Kung waved two hands vaguely.
"I can fly all kinds of ship, no error. Even without matrix tapes, I'm the best. What do these want?"
The Bar Kung approached the table diffidently, towing behind him a very large hairy bell, which kept up by hopping on its one foot. There was a voice box strapped to the tuft at its tip.
"This is green shading to indigo. It's an Eft," he said helpfully. "It's the line top sanitary officer."
"Pleased to make its acquaintance," said Kin. With a deft flick, the Eft produced a transparent box from under its cloak, skin, and flourished it a few inches in front of Kin's eyes. She heard Marco hiss.
"Voila, regarde," screeched the voice box. "Earthy and mout-mout sappy end question."
A large black bird in the box looked beadily at Kin and went back to preening its feathers.
"It turned up yesterday," said the Bar Kung. "I told him. It's a bird, an earth animal, only it talks. We looked it up in the Guide to Sapien Species, but there is only one avian, and this is not it."
"It looks like a damn big raven," said Kin, taking the box. "What's the problem?" She paused. "I see the problem. You want to know, do you arrest it or destroy it? Anyway, how did a bird get in here?"
"Puzzle. We don't know."
On an impulse, Kin opened the box. The bird hopped up onto the rim and looked at her. "It's harmless," she said. "Probably someone's pet."
"Pet? Mental symbiote," drawled Marco. "Humans are crazy."
The Eft shuffled forward uncertainly and shoved its tentacle towards Kin again. It held a thick loop of intricately knotted string. With a sinking heart, she recognized it as an Eftnik touch book.
"When I told it you were you, it went all the way back to its pod for its translation of your book," said the Bar Kung proprietorially. "It wants you to."
But Kin was already tying a personalized knot at the beginning of the coil.
"Understand, not self," squawked the voice box. "For, pup, belong, sibling." "He means..."
"I understand," said Kin wearily.
"J-Lo!"
screamed the raven.
"You take it away,"
said the Bar Kung, thrusting the cage into a pair of Marco's arms.
"She can feed it, or eat it, or make love to it, or teach it to sing, or whatever humans do with pests."
"Pets,"
said Marco. He took the cage. There didn't seem to be any alternative. The Eft watched them head towards the shuttle bay.
"Crazy?"
it ventured.
"Humans run the universe now," said the Bar Kung bitterly. "Such craziness. I wish I could get hold of some. Notice the way humans walk as if they own the galaxy."
The Eft considered this. It had always found it an effort to comprehend the method of locomotion that didn't involve tentacles.
No,
it said. There were few passengers on the shuttle. There was a moment of high G as strap-on rockets sent it swinging out of the hangar and down the line. At least I'll have a native guide, said Kin, and grinned to show that it was a joke. But this Kung seemed to know about humour. Legally human?
I was hoping you might be able to help me there, said Marco,
fishing a pouch out of his travelling bag.
I never been down there in my life. Sometimes I've run freighters there, but only as far as up.
You mean you got that close and never went to look at your people's world?
Whose people's world? I was born on Earth.
He brought out a bone-coloured pipe, filled it from a pouch, and lit it with an everglow. Kin wrinkled her nose.
What hell's that? Tobacco, said Marco. Cutty Peerless 6. There's a man in London sends it out to me. That's London, England, you understand.
Do you enjoy it? There was a click as the cabin air filters came on. Marco took the pipe out of his mouth and looked at it reflectively.
On the whole, no, he said. But it is historically satisfying. May I ask you a question?
Go right ahead.
Do you have a thing about Kung? Sexually, I mean.
Kin stared into the great grey eyes and at the mottled skin, and the snappy answer died in her throat. She recalled occasional rumours. Marco radiated maleness from his matchstick figure. Kung males were almost unbelievably masculine, and priapic, apparently. Kung were directly polarised, male and female, with none of that subtle elision between the absolute male and absolute female psyches that humans possessed. To some human women, the Kung machismo was magnetic.
Never in a thousand years, she said levelly. You can call me old-fashioned if you like. Thank goodness, said the Kung. I hope I did not cause offence.
Nothing that won't heal.
What made you ask? Oh, you wouldn't credit the stories I could tell you, Kin Arad, of young human females with frefracomb hairstyles, and what they think is genuine Kung-style dress and a superficial and uninformed taste in Tlang music. When I played piano in a nightclub on Crespo during the spacer slump, I had to lock my windows at night, and once too young.
He paused, then went on.
Of course I realize you are a cosmopolitan woman, but I once had to hit the wife of a New Earth ambassador with a chair.
The raven fretted in its transparent cage. Kin glanced at it. "What are we going to do if J-Lo contacts us?" she said. Marco took the pipe out of his mouth.
"Do? I intend to visit this flat world. What else?"
Tide was up when the shuttle juddered into the terminal, smoke pouring from the brake pads. The Kung had solved the water level problem by building the terminus buildings on a raft that rose up and down the line as the migrating oceans shifted around the planet. Kin peered out into the grey rain. Around the station raft, other woven buildings were bobbing at their anchor poles. A few Kung were abroad this early, paddling coracles along the shifting streets like a regatta for golems. Marco splashed up, dragging a small and terrified Kung behind him.
"This says it's been hired to pick us up. Not very dramatic, is it?"
Prodded by Marco, the boat Kung led them over the gaggle of boats moored around the platform to a human-built tourist speedster, its four balloon tyres now doubling as flotation bags. Kin settled into the back seat. The rain was warm, and she was already sodden. Maybe there was something particularly penetrative about Kung water. Marco shoved the boat Kung into the front passenger seat and fumbled with the controls. The mooring rope groaned and parted as the boat bucketed forward between wings of spray. He drove with three arms draped nonchalantly over the seat. Forearms were rare. In the bad old days before the revolution, high-caste Kung had used mitogenetic techniques to influence the growing embryo. Forearms meant warrior caste. Kin decided to try tact. "How come," she asked, "how come you have to have shirts specially made?" He didn't look round.
"Family tradition," he said. "My family always send one male into the warriors, and they operated on my mother. But you remember the line break of 58?
"Sure. Earth was cut off for a month. Some lunatic bombed both termini simultaneously."
"Yes. My parents were on the embassy staff at New Stavanger. By the time the line was replaced, my mother was in labour."
"And the Kung believed that when a child was born, its receptive mind was taken over by the nearest available discarnate soul."
"As a matter of fact, my father was prevented from killing himself by the Shand cultural attaché, who was dining with him," said Marco levelly. "He thought he could get to me first, you see. It didn't work. So they put out humanity papers on me and found me a home with an old couple down in Mexico. And then they left Earth. End of story. How come you're bald?"
Kin's hand flew to her wig.
Age. Hair can't take it."
Marco was watching the horizon intently.
"Oh," he said. "I wondered. I always think one shouldn't be shy about this sort of thing, don't you?"
The boat chattered through half-drowned groves and flotillas of villages until it was brought to a dead halt by weeds brushing against the hull. Marco swore and kicked the power changeover.
"It's the tide," said Marco.
Hull out of the water, they whirred on through streaming vegetation. A few late fish, abandoned by the water, were hopping awkwardly after the departing sea. On Kung, only amphibians survived for long. Presently, the vegetation and the gradient suggested country that was seldom inundated for more than 1 hour in 20. Under the boat Kung's direction, they picked up a track that wound up into permanently dry grassland. If Kung had been a human world, it would have been cultivated to within an inch of its life. The Kung shunned it as a desert. The boat jolted over a ridge. There was a round valley, with the inevitable lake at the bottom and a spaceship bobbing at its centre.
"It's a General Motors neutrino, ground-to-ground ring-rim fusion motor, spindle unibrake, 34 staterooms, choice of extras," said Marco,
lighting his pipe.
"The N-system systems are a bugger. I flew one once. They were built to meet a demand which wasn't."
It looked like a fat donut. "Has it got any armaments?" asked Kin weakly.
"J-Lo!"
screamed the raven.
"Wouldn't like to be on the wrong side of the fusion flame."
The boat Kung was looking at Marco's pipe in terror.
"Apart from that, there's a roomy hold. Name your own horrors."
As they stepped into the ship's open hatch, the boat Kung gunned his craft and headed back across the lake.
"Looks like the only way off is up," said Kin. "I wonder what frightened him."
"Me,"
said Marco, and walked aboard soundlessly, then hissed and crouched into a fighting stance. A shape lurched towards them. Racial memories told Kin to run and climb a tree. The thing bearing down on them could only be intent on clawing gashes in soft membranes and gouging with those fangs. Racial memories were behind the times as usual. Kin grinned politely. The Shand could just about stand in the high corridor without its tiny ears touching the ceiling, which meant that it was almost 3 meters high. It was, though, holding the knee-sagging, self-effacing posture that Shandy always adopted inside the artifacts of smaller races, as if in terror lest they accidentally eat someone. Typically, it, she, was as broad as she was high. with wide arms ending in calloused knuckles that could have doubled as another pair of feet. There was an intelligent bear's face, but it was a bear with binocular vision and a domed skull and several walruses in its ancestry. It had two tusks, said to have been used originally for scraping mollusks from the beds of freezing oceans, now as useless as the vermiform appendix, and carved into status-denoting shapes. Its snout...
"If you have clout, Flinift," she lisped reproachfully.
There was something altogether familiar about some of those tusk carvings. Kin stuck her fingers in the corners of her mouth for tuskal effects and tried her shandy.
"I am relative almost parched and dry, and the kong is small stain go far," she spat. "I greet you in all Greece, O shand of the lower Convexi Delta Moraine region, unless I am very much mistaken."
"I congratulate you on your mastery of the speech," said the shand graciously. "My name is 56 syllables long, but you may call me Silver. Are you coming to the flat world? Is the kong dangerous? He looks uneasy."
"I think it's because he can't understand shandy. On the other hand, all kong look uneasy. It's probably something to do with the flash tides. This one's human, by the way. Don't press the point."
"What are you talking about?" Marco asked suspiciously.
By the time Silver had led them into the ship's observation cabin, they had reached a compromise. Kin and Marco spoke to Silver in allspeak, which the shand understood, but, because of her tusks, could not speak. Silver spoke in shandy, which she could pronounce, and Marco could not understand, and Kin translated into allspeak for Marco. Eventually it was established by careful retranslation that Silver was a sociologist, comparative historian, linguist, and meat-animal herder.
"All of them?"
asked Marco. "I once knew a shand who was a lift attendant, biochemist, and seal hunter," said Kin.
"I got here yesterday," said Silver. "I was working on Prequidac when this man—"
"We know him," said Kin. "What did he offer you?"
"I do not understand," said Silver blankly.
"Bait," said Kin, "to go with him to the flat world."
"Oh, I see. Nothing should he have done?"
Kin translated. Marco stared at the shand in astonishment, then snorted and wandered off into the depths of the ship.
"There is something familiar about your name," said Silver to Kin.
"I wrote a book called Continuous Creation." Silver smiled politely.
"Did you?"
Marco had disappeared. The two females took a stroll through the donut hull. With every step, Kin became more uneasy. This was a strange ship. It had been converted to a freighter. There were four staterooms. The rest of the Taurus was fuel tank. The ship had been designed to be a rich idiot's toy. Only rich men and spies used ships that could stagger out of a gravity well under their own power. Consider. There was a line on every useful world, and once up the line, all that was needed was a pressurized box with altitude jets and an elsewhere matrix to get you to the top of any other line. A few specialized trades and the tourist industry used ships capable of traversing a solar system. There were even some ships that could fly ground to orbit in an emergency. No one needed a ship that could reach orbit and fly across a system and jump via the elsewhere. This one could. Kin's unease began to be tinted with excitement. The line and the matrix had chopped space into mere pauses between identical line-top arrival lounges. This ship was something else. There was a dumbwaiter, a big model, programmed to produce anything from lobster thermidor to sawdust. It could even reproduce shand proteins. There was a medical room that would not have disgraced a city. There was also a deep freeze, a fact so unusual that Kin lifted the lid. "Now there's a thing," she murmured. Silver peered in and rooted around among the frosted packages.
"Nothing remarkable," she said. "Meat, fish, fowl, leaves, swollen tubers, human food."
Kin pointed at the dumbwaiter, humming seductively to itself. "Ever known one of those to fail?" she said.
"They don't," said Silver. "If they did, you humans would never have allowed us into space."
"Then why waste space and wait hauling this junk? If he was nervous, he'd bring Shandy food."
Of course, I forget he's old."
"Old?"
"Old enough to be fussy about machine-made food. This lot here must have cost him a fortune."
"Please explain about old," said Silver insistently.
Kin told the Shand about the Terminus probe. When she finished, she was aware that the giant was looking at her oddly.
"You humans must have been mad for space," she said.
They turned as Marco strode silently into the room, trembling with rage.
"What is this ship?" he bawled. "There's enough weaponry in the hold to blow a hole through a planet!"
"And small arms," murmured Kin. Marco stared at her, while she felt her mind beginning to think very fast indeed.
"Precisely. But how did you guess?"
"No guess. I think I've seen enough. Silver, was there a message from J-Lo when you got here?"
"The Kung in the ferry said I was to wait. Why?"
Kin shook her head urgently. "Marco, there must be spacesuits around. If we got into them, could you evacuate the ship?"
"Down here? It'd implode. I'd have to take her up, and that—"
"This is a .0003 Clipe automatic. If you all leapt at me, the chances are I would not get you all. But who would I shoot first?" J-Lo was standing by the door, the pistol dangling nonchalantly from one hand. Kin thought about what a stream of Clipe needles could do and decided to stand very still. She glanced at Silver. The Shand wasn't looking at J-Lo. She was staring at Marco. He had dropped into a curious bow-legged stance, arms held out from his body like an ancient gunfighter, and he was hissing softly.
"Tell it, if it attacks, I will shoot," said J-Lo. "Tell it."
"You know he can understand you," said Kin coldly. She heard Silver say in Shandy,
"In a minute there's going to be an almighty fight, Kin. No one threatens a Kung and lives."
"Marco is legally human," said Kin in all speak.
"Yeah, that fooled me," said J-Lo. "I should have known better. I told that agency computer on Real Earth to pick three people that fitted my specifications, and it gave me three names. The damn thing never bothered to say two of them were B.E.M.'s."
Only Silver, student of history, understood the term. She growled. "It surely mentioned planets of origin," said Kin.
"The big frog was born on Earth, though, and the bear born in a ship orbiting Shand," said J-Lo. "Doesn't anyone ever mention species these days? Legally human, ye God, do not move!"
"I was wondering where you were," said Kin. "I should have been looking for a patch of fuzzy air, looter." He grinned lopsidedly.
"The word is nasty, but true. Just like the company looted strata machines and the line monomolecular technique."
"Not true. The company administers them for the general good."
"Fine. So on this trip the profits will be for my general good. I figure I'm owed something. I knew Levine and the rest. I trained with them. I'm taking my reward now. I've got the jackpot."
Something small and black hopped around the curve of the corridor behind him. Kin recalled that Marco, determinedly human, had been trying to make a pet of the raven. It was feeding time.
"I shall need assistance," J-Lo said.
"You've got the self-filling purse," said Kin. "That sounds like a jackpot to me."
"Nah. With what's here, we can start our own company where we're going."
He reached into a side pocket and pulled out a navigation reel.
"It's all here.
I would prefer to talk further without the pifdrel threatening us," said Silver painfully. "It is not kind."
The raven flew up onto Jalo's shoulder and screamed in his ear. A stream of clipe needles zonked into the ceiling. Marco moved so fast that his passage across the space separating him from Jalo could only be deduced from the fact that he was suddenly astride the fallen figure, the clipe held in one hand and the other three raised to smash a skull. He blinked and looked around as if waking from a dream. He stared at Jalo and then leaned forward.
"He's dead," he said helplessly. "I didn't even strike him."
Kin knelt down by the man. "He was dead before you got there." She had seen the face go snow-white after the bird's scream. Jalo had already been dropping when Marco reached him. He was sufficiently recently dead for it to be worth slotting his body into the ship's medical sargo, which immediately flashed a row of red lights. Kin checked the readings on the panel below. Cell rupture, organ rupture, brain damage. When they got back to a human world, it would be 6 months in a resurrection vat for Jalo.
"A coronary?" suggested Silver.
"Massive," said Kin. "He's lucky." There was silence, and when Kin turned, the Shand was looking at her in astonishment. "Coronary is easy," she explained. "We can repair that. Simple job. If Marco had got to work on him, there wouldn't have been anything left to put in the vat. He threatened Marco." Silver nodded.
"Kung are paranoid, but he also acts like a human."
"You watch him enter a room. That walk of his is a fighting stance. Kung don't know the meaning of the word fear."
"Fine," said Silver pleasantly. "Half Kung, half human. Well, I know the meaning of the word fear, and right now I'm scared."
"Yeah, I can see." A few seconds of vertigo, an eternity of despair. The first thing Kin registered when her sight came back was the cabin window and the view outside. The ship appeared to be surrounded by a fog full of icebergs. She was dimly aware of an alarm which cut off abruptly. She was aware of hazy stars and of drifting across the cabin because there was no gravity. Silver was floating near what had been the ceiling, out cold.
End of side 3.